Now, we are discussing the dangers of digilantism. So I'm not too sure if you remember just recently when violence erupted at the Moses Mabhida Stadium. My next guest actually went through the videos of the rampage with reverse image search software, such as Google and TinEye. And with this, he actually tried to identify the hooligans. And then when the PSL and police eventually asked for assistance in identifying some of the suspects, he felt vindication as a proactive member of society. Personally, he actually didn't receive many hits from the grainy public videos, but he actually did get some close comparisons. But the question does arise of whether many others are actually doing this as well, and also are they doing it with the right intention, of course, and if not, then this could actually lead to online vigilantism, known as digilantism. So, you know, just when you think about it, online just vigilantes combining their digital skills with vigilantism can actually either be a useful contribution, or it can be something rather dangerous. And now, discussing digilantism is Dr. Colin Takur, and he will be unpacking this for us. He is actually a digital activist who is committed to the dream of one person, one connected device. And now he joins me on the line. Good morning, Dr. Colin Takur. Thank you so much for joining us right here on Cape Talk. Now, before we delve right into digilantism, the pros and cons thereof, I'd like to ask you this question. Before we just unpack the subject matter at hand, I'd like to know, what led you to becoming a devotee of technology and determinism?
Well, my nominal background is that I'm an academic. I hold a PhD in computer science. But I found that computer science to be too far away from people and the people that it impacts. So in my quest to become an academic, I've decided that one of the things that I need to do is to start working at what I call the bottom of the pyramid applications, applications that you and I use every day that can make a difference in our life. I'm talking about nowadays, like social media, your Facebook and your Instagram and your WhatsApp. How can you use it not successfully to be a online citizen, but how about using it to become a productive citizen?
And that's exactly it. It's about becoming, it's about becoming productive and actually becoming one accurately. And the thing is, as much as we use social media every day, there is a level of responsibility that we need to just always keep in mind and just to adhere to on a daily basis.
Absolutely. I go back to the time before you and I were born, when John F. Kennedy said in the 60s, he asked not what America can do for you, but what you can do for America. And that's what it is. I mean, we have a country that's battling with massive debt. We're in recession. So there's a lot of priorities that our government has, but those priorities are all competing. So if we can take the burden of the state in terms of helping the state to perform some of its functions, we can relieve the state to do other things like building hospitals and stuff like that. So we can't keep crying foul and running to the police at every little thing. How about we form little WhatsApp groups to find our missing puppies and our dogs and things like that? And if we can remove that level of work from government, then we free them from to do really important things like find criminals and murderers and things like that.
And, I think, it's funny that you mentioned the different types of ways in which we can become digilantes, for the lack of a better term. Mm. And I will definitely be touching on that, especially the pros and cons. But for those of our listeners who are just hearing this term for the first time or may not be familiar, what is digilantism?
Okay, so we need to take a little bit of a step back in order to get to unpack that word. Let's start with the word that we are familiar with, which is vigilantism. So vigilantism comes from the word to be vigilant, to keep looking. And we've had many instances of vigilantism in South Africa where people take the law into their own hands. And for some odd reason, modern society seems to look at vigilantism as mob justice, as justice without permission of the law. But the word vigilantism actually means watchman or guard. It's actually to keep an eye on something, right?
Right.
So if you had to take watching onto online, the online world lends itself automatically to people who are on the watch. What do we do on online? We look, we observe, we see, isn't that so? So vigilantism is an online form of vigilantism where you can take your technical skills, your technological skills, your interpretive skills, your cognitive skills, and use all of those skills together for some social common good.
And, you know, that's important thing. As long as the, you know, it's I love how you mentioned social common good, because there has to be a collective good intention in order for digilantism to have the positive effect that it's supposed to.
Yeah. So let me give you a negative example so that we put that in clear perspective.
Yes.
In 2011, during the so-called YOBS in the UK, what they did was they found out with the BlackBerry service, the BlackBerry Messenger service was encrypted. So what they did was they started using the BlackBerry to meet and at any particular point, smash the window, undertake a smash and grab, break the windows and run away. And they call that the CrackBerry riots. So they would meet at some point, but nobody could work out where they were meeting because the messages were encrypted. So people took social media, as you and I know it,
yes,
used the encrypted version of it to actually undertake some illicit or illegal activity. So this is the danger when we talk about digilantism. We must be very clear that our goal is very, very different from something dark and obstructive.
And, you know, that's, you know, when, as I was just also researching this as well, I mean, some of the horror cases where I found where, you know, where I've actually researched the, just the negative sides of digilantism, and what you're unpacking now is quite shocking, because as much as, you know, you do have, certain crowdsourcing platforms that do, they initially are created for the intention of either weeding out some sort of criminal activity or, you know, just when it comes to any, maybe sort of, any sort of, racial commentary or anything derogatory or profoundly sexist, trying to actually rectify that. You know, at the end of the day, they, as much as these are created, the when it comes to how people use them, that the intention of the users can't actually be controlled.
Exactly. So you mentioned the word crowdsourcing. So crowdsourcing is a big technical term that we now use in social media. And crowdsourcing is basically the notion of people attracting like-minded people or people who view this as a cause. The crowdsourcing could be to save rhinos. The crowdsourcing could be to help a particular athlete who can't get to another point. Crowdsourcing could be to help a student go through university. So the notion of crowdsourcing has many, many meanings, and in different contexts it means different things. With respect to crime, the people use the word either crowdsourcing or crime sourcing. So we start using the word, you know, crime sourcing to leverage the finding of a particular criminal. And this is what happened in that piece that I wrote at Moses Mabhida, where the PSL and SAFA was horrified by the activity that happened with the Free State Stars and the Amakosi football team. I must declare that I'm a Buccaneer. So
yes.
let's be clear on that.
Yes.
But as a football fan, you know,
yeah,
we don't want our nation to import hooliganism. That's exactly what we don't want. And of course, everybody naively thought, well, it's on national TV, it's in the glare of the public eye, and you've got all these HD TVs recording every move of all of the people, and hurrah, within 5 or 6 days, we'll be able to find all the criminals and put them away, and of course the country can move forward. Now, here's the thing. The mobile devices that the people were using to record and the devices that they were using to upload the videos onto YouTube were at best very, very grainy pictures. The photograph that you take on your smartphone might be a very high quality one, but the video quality of your smartphone is very, very poor. So people have started using the videos to observe what was going on at Moses Mabhida, and with a little bit of anger and with misty eyes, you start thinking that you don't really want to see. You might dislike a person and know that person supported a particular team, triangulate a personal dislike with a public event, and you know, and you got a very, very thin link between an event and a person, which might ultimately be untrue.
And when that happens,
you have this online mob justice coming, where you actually find somebody who's illegal. I mean, somebody who's inappropriately accused. And that is a huge danger.
It's definitely a huge danger indeed. I agree with you, because now some innocent person who may somewhat resemble that blurry image on the smartphone or on the video that's being circulated, this poor person, you know, unbeknownst to them, they're just living their life. Then, you know, at one moment, they have a mob after them, you know, and it turns their life upside down. And you know, with social media being what it is, when you are wrongfully accused of something, it affects every other area of your life. It could affect your social positioning, your employment, you know, it's just so many things. And of course, psychologically too. So, I mean, you know, when it comes to that, it's irresponsible to, you know, use it in the sense where, you know, you will have a vendetta of sorts against that person, and that's when it gets out of control.
Absolutely. So what we are looking for is, we're not going to be able to stop this online vigilantism. We're not going to be able to stop vigilantism because people are moved by anger, people are moved by pity, people are moved by fear, people are moved by many reasons to want to help. So let's look at the positive. People join this campaign not because they dislike somebody. They join this campaign because they want to do good and to be seen to be doing good. The question is, how do we moderate this activity? How do we create some kind of mechanism that allows people to report their suspicions and their fear in a way that still preserves the integrity of the person who they think is a culprit? So in other words, if you find or you think that you positively identify a particular person at the Moses Mabhida Stadium, then the thing to do would be to have a moderated forum where you would alert the investigating officer or your nearest police forum to say, look, I think I know this guy, or I think I found his picture on another Facebook wall. So they would be able to take that event, go there and do an investigation. I mean, the person could be 2,000 kilometers away. He could be right down there in Cape Talk Radio working with you this evening, and we would think that person was in Durban. You know, so we really need to have that type of logic and forensic science entering the equation in this one. Let me give you an example of something that happened this week, just to illustrate the point. This lady by the name of Sharita Dixon Cole, it's a very interesting story which you should read. So Sharita was stopped this Wednesday that went by, because I'm researching this, so I'm following it quite carefully. She was stopped by a police who suspected her for being DUI, driving under the influence, and he asked her to exit the vehicle, and she turned up, and she got out, and she she tried to walk, and he determined that she was suspected that she was under the influence, and he arrested her. She went onto a rampage, went onto national media, and then said that the policeman harassed her, asked her for sexual favors, assaulted her, et cetera, et cetera. So the victim now became the victim played the persecution game. But it turned out that, fortunately for the policeman who had arrested her, he had his body arm camera on at all times. So the entire interaction between Sharita and the policeman was captured on camera. So when she went online, the whole thing went viral, and of course the policeman was persecuted. So the victim became the victimizer. Do you understand the swing in this? Now, was found out to be lying, so the victim became the victimizer, and the policeman turned out to be the person who was accused, and he was proven to be innocent. So recording things is not a bad thing, and keeping images is not a bad thing. We just need to be careful how we interpret the information that we get.
And that's the thing. I mean, now that you actually, as you are unpacking this now, and also when you were talking about smartphones and just the video quality, you know, I can't help but think of where it all started with the Boston Marathon. And, you know, Charlie Beckett, he called the Boston Marathon fiasco a media literacy seminar, and he hopes that, in quotes, that people are learning to be less stupid. So, just keeping in mind with what you said, you know, it's surely when it comes to monitoring something like this. And I mean, this policeman did follow procedure and he had the evidence with him. So he was acting ethically and he was just doing his job. And, you know, in instances such as this, you know, we naturally, from an emotional standpoint, especially on social media, we naturally gravitate towards the victim without, you know, actually looking at everything. And I think that's where the danger lies, because, you know, we become these armchair detectives or armchair, investigators or forensic scientists. And I think that's where the danger lies, because at the end of the day, you know, we're just social media users. We're not equipped to gather that information.
We become a virtual mob, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And you know what? The thing is, there is another word, unfortunately, that's entering the equation. And they call it word slacktivism. Now, slacktivism is basically a wannabe vigilante who sits on his computer and becomes a keyboard warrior. So he thinks that if he clicks like on something, his contribution to saving the world is done. So this slacktivist is the most dangerous kind of activist, because they really don't care. they influence opinion negatively because they're just one click away from clicking on something that they haven't thought or conceptualized. So we really need to be careful that in your community of vigilantes, you don't have these slacktivists sitting in there, because slacktivists just go click, 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 like, dislike. And you have no idea whether they have quantity, whether they have substance, or whether they've considered something. And this is that emerging group of inertial people that can negatively influence any online engagement. And we really need to be cautious about what impact that they can have on us.
And, you know, it's funny, we get so caught up in the moment. We never think about everything in the broader sense when we become vigilantes. Mm. Yes. So we don't think about it beyond the action itself. And, yeah. You know, it's quite, I mean, I mean, it's quite interesting just to hear that there are terms for this, especially with a slacktivist, you said.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's basically, you know, it comes from the word, you know, slack.
Yes.
And the word activist. So, you know, slacktivist.
Slacktivist.
You know, just to tell you that there were some really interesting, good, heartwarming stories in South Africa in terms of vigilantes. I'm just going to give you three very quickly. In 2012, there was a lady by the name of Lynn Peters, which you should go and look at. Lynn Peters tweeted that her boyfriend got carjacked. And she said that what had happened was her boyfriend got carjacked in Midrand, and he was thrown into the boot of his car. But they didn't take away his cell phone from him. So he had his cell phone. So while the car was moving, he turned on his cell phone. Obviously, the cell phone, a smartphone, has a light. So he turned on his smartphone and he tweeted to Lynn to say that, "I am carjacked. Please help." So what she did was she tweeted to the 71 followers that followed her, said, "Help! My boyfriend has been carjacked. Please RT." And, you know, as you know, RT stands for retweet. Here's the interesting thing. Only 7 of the people picked up her tweet, and they retweeted it. One of the people that retweeted it was one guy which you may know called Pig Spotter.
Yes.
Pig Spotter has over 100,000 followers in Gauteng alone. And guess what? Within hours, he was found because there was a crowd search for him. They crowdsourced and everybody got together, and eventually the person was found. So this happened in real time. It received international attention all over the world. This is the power of crowd searching of real time. I'm sure you would remember Baby Simpiwe. When
yes.
Baby Simpiwe went missing on that Friday in Durban, I mean, the whole of Durban was looking for this child. There were 400,000 tweets in a couple of hours. So we must never, ever underestimate the positive power of good. So we have two types of things. The one where we are involved for collective good to find a missing child or a victim. The other where we find people who committed a crime. Where you try to find people who committed a crime, that's where it gets gray and difficult, because in that case, we are assuming the role of judge and jury and policeman. That way it becomes very, very difficult, because we are neither policemen nor judges. We can support the police in providing them with evidence and clues, but let the police make the determination.
I concur. You know, there is a line. We need to know exactly. I mean, we can definitely play our role, but only to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is
yeah.
a certain point where we actually say, you know what? We are not experts in collecting or gathering evidence or disseminating that evidence. So it's better to actually just, this is that point where we pass this over to the police. And I think, when it comes to these crowdsourcing pages, I don't know if they have, as I'm just thinking of this now, if they have a limit as to, you know, judging on the types of comments and feedback and the types of imagery and video footage that they receive, that they also at a point decide responsibly just to close off that particular discussion or just that particular, a search, you know, for either the person or whether it's a thing of, just hunting down a fraudster. So is there any point where they do that?
Let me help you there. So here would be my suggestion. It is very difficult to moderate an unmoderated forum like social media. But let us go back in history. Let's look at, like, for instance, the Rose Must Fall movement or the Fees Must Fall movement. I have a master's student right now who's just analyzed the 576,000 tweets on the Fees Must Fall campaign, and he's done some amazing work. And, you know, and he worked out the sentiment of people over time. And what allowed us to analyze that entire social media campaign longitudinally, meaning over time from 2015 to now, was the fact that the whole campaign was hinged on a hashtag, right? So say we had, let's revisit the Moses Mabhida incident. We all were angry. We all had issues.
Yes.
What we need to do is, or the police need to do, is to create a hashtag very, very quickly. So when you do that, you actually now have some metadata which anybody can search on. So you find something and you think of something, you use the hashtag, you triangulate your information, you put it up there. People can look at it and say, well, actually, I've just seen what you've seen, but this person that you think that was guilty was actually with me in Cape Town. So he couldn't have been in Durban. You know, so that helps people to do real-time triangulation from that point of view. You know, so we really, and that, to my mind, that's about the only easy way that we can do something. If I may, I would like also, you would note that something else quite horrendous happened in South Africa this week, something that I'm reading, the Bitcoin controversy. I don't know if you heard about
yes,
it.
Yes, I heard about the Bitcoin ransom. Is that the one?
Exactly, right?
Yes.
Yeah. No, not the Bitcoin ransom. That's a victim, right?
Yes.
But this is where 28,000 people have been duped by the BTC Global Group. And the BTC Global Group has been selling this Bitcoin for a long time, and they created a person by the name of Steve Twain. Well, the people are alleging that they created this, and I'm pretty sure Steve Twain doesn't exist. But here's the thing: there's a wonderful journalist by the name of Jesse Holmes, who I would call my favorite vigilante in South Africa right now. Jesse has written some amazing investigative journalism online, following and tracking the BTC Global event. And, you know, and the thing is, you know, must remember the 28,000 people that I'm talking about have lost over R1 billion. So it's now gone to the hawks and the serious economic police, whatever that unit is called. And it's a really, really huge thing. So this lady, Jessie Holmes, I've been poring over her material over the last 2 days, because the police yesterday released a statement warning people not to deal with BTC Global. If you want to do a follow-up interview on this one, I would suggest that you find Jessie Holmes and interview her in terms of the good work that she's doing as an investigative journalism, but also being a pure vigilante, working with pure social media platforms, finding and tracking those people that are perpetuating this horrible. It's a Ponzi scheme, in other words.
Oh, my goodness. You know, there's just so much that we can unpack, and I do wish we had more time. I'm going to have to wrap up the conversation, Dr. Colin Thakur, and I'd love to just say thank you so much, and I will definitely be following up on your favorite vigilante. There's just so much more to this. It's such an interesting conversation.
I'm going to be writing on it, so is there anybody listening out there wanting to do their master's or PhD in this topic? Please contact me. I'll be happy to talk
to
them.
And where can they contact you?
They can contact me at the Durban University of Technology or perhaps through you. It'll be fine.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much for availing yourself to our show, and we have learned so much.
My pleasure, man. Thank you.